This is Blessed Trails with Belinda Gale on Equestrian Legacy Radio. Heard around the world on our free mobile app and online at equestrianlegacy.net.
I am so glad our trails have crossed. Oh, the joy you bring to me. As I look upon each face, such kindness there I see. I wish for you the love of God, a love that never fails. And as we travel life's long path, I wish you blessed trails. Our trails now go their separate ways, and life goes rolling on. I hope our trails will cross again before God takes us home. We share the wondrous love of God, a love that never fails. And as we travel life's long path, I wish you blessed trails. Yes, as we travel life's long path, I wish you blessed trails. Blessed trails.
Welcome to Blessed Trails. I am your host, Belinda Gale, and our show features interviews with wonderful guests, gospel and patriotic music, as well as songs that just plain lift your heart. Most all of them with a definite Western flair. On today's show, we have something just a little bit unusual for us. Our guest last week was Rusty Richards, and Rusty has led such a full, rich life and is such a great storyteller. We just flat ran out of time with still so much to cover. So this week, we bring you part two. So let's kick off today's show with Rusty performing with the Sons of the Pioneers, Call of the Wild.
If the summer wind blows in something that grows into something that you can't quite name, and you feel the pride you just can't hide, like a wolf never meant to be tamed. Ooh,
it's a call of the wild.
If the whippoorwill calls and the thundering falls and rainbows to the sky, and you feel the thrill that sends up a chill when you hear the low of a wolf cry.
It's a call of the wild.
When you feel the warm Santanas blowing, or see the crackling lightning break the sky, when you hear the raging rivers flowing, there's a love in the call of the wild that you can't deny.
When you see a dewdrop sparkle like a diamond, when you hear a rippling stream, there's a time in the morning when the rustle of a new day wakes up a wondered and dream.
Ooh. And the call of the wild. When you feel the warm Santanas blowing, or see the crackling lightning break the sky, when you hear the raging rivers flowing, there's a love in the call of the wild that you can't deny.
When you see a dewdrop sparkle like a diamond, when you hear a rippling scream, there's a time in the morning when the rustle of a new day wakes up a wonder and dream.
Ooh. And the call of the wild, rippling, flowing, thundering, blowing, wonderland call of the wild.
love that sound and love that yodel. How beautiful. I am delighted to have Rusty back with us. And oh my goodness, did we ever have fun last week. For those of you not with us last week, I would like to mention again that Rusty has done just about everything cowboy you can imagine. His extraordinary career has spanned everything from day work on ranches to rodeo, from stuntman to singer-songwriter, from horse trainer to author and magazine article contributor, and goodness, so much more in between. And his amazing career has also garnered a boatload of awards. And while I won't list them all again this week, I do have a few of them that bear repeating, like his induction into the Cowboy Hall of Fame and getting a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame when he was with the Sons of the Pioneers. Also, when he was at the Sons, they were declared a national treasure by the Smithsonian Institution. And Rusty was inducted into the Western Music Hall of Fame in 2004. There are so many more awards that, and we covered a lot of them last week. So again, I'm not going to go over them again, but let's just jump in here and bring back my dear friend, Rusty Richards. Hey, Rusty.
Hi, Belinda.
Thank you so much for that
wonderful introduction.
Oh, well, you had a wonderful life and so many accomplishments, and it's just so fun to have you on the show and share. And this is a first for us, a part two. So we're kind of in new territory here, but it's very fun. So those of you who are just tuning in and hadn't caught part one, it is archived, and you can go back and catch that when you have a few minutes. But for now, we've kind of laid the groundwork last week as a foundation on your early part of your life and a little bit into your music, and that you had done a radio show or a television show that you had for a short time, Rusty, and then went off and joined the Marines, like so many young men. Yes, and then you came back and you were working, doing some cowboying, I believe, and then got into some stunt work, and then that kind of led to, I think that's for the part that led to your Sons of the Pioneers. So do you want to kind of catch us up a little bit and then tell us how you came to be a part of the Sons of the Pioneers? That's a great story.
Well, thank you. What I kind of left out is that I started training horses when I was a kid, you know. I tried to get on at the big outfits and stuff, and they kind of saw me as a jelly bean. They weren't too interested, and I knew I was going to be a cowboy. Now, if I'm going to do this, I'm going to have to find a way on my own. And I just I learned to shoe horses, and I started breaking horses. I still use the term breaking horses out of deference to the old vaqueros and the people that I admire so much from the early days. They don't use that term a lot now, but I do, because they weren't in the business of torturing horses either. They were among the greatest horsemen ever, and they used the term, so I still use it. But anyway, I wove that horse training throughout my entire career, because Amy and I, we had somewhere between 40 and 50 head of horses here. We raised, trained, and sold horses. And I had two ranches that sent me all the colts that I could take, knowing that I'd be gone part of the time. So I never stopped. I never got out of it and got back into it again. Mm. But when I worked in films, what happened is the bottom fell out of the Westerns. They dropped a whole lot of them in one season. And there just wasn't that much work. And I never was really good at competing for what little work there was. And I took a job breaking horses down in Orange County, and I'd worked for the outfit for 13 months breaking horses, and I decided to give show business another chance. And Burt Reynolds threw a big party for me and invited all the people that he thought might be able to help my career. And nothing really came of that, except that Ken Curtis was there, and that kind of renewed my friendship with him, because I knew he liked my singing. He'd heard me sing on the set before, you know. And long and the short of it is, I got a phone call from a stuntman friend of mine, a guy named Forrest Burns. And he said he'd run into Pat Brady and that they were looking for a tenor. And he said, all I know is cowboys. And they had ended their visit, and he got clear back out to his car before he remembered me. And luckily, Pat hadn't left, and he ran back, and he said, "By gosh, I do too. I know a cowboy sings like a bird." He said, you hear him, you'll hire him, I guarantee you. So Pap said, well, here, give him, you know, give him my number and have him give me a call. So I was excited when Forrest called me. He told me later that I told him, I'll see if I can fit that into my busy schedule. I was pretty excited. And anyway, I got Pat on the phone, and he didn't sound too enthused, and I knew what he was thinking. They didn't think they were going to get the caliber of singer that they're looking for among the Cowboys, you know. Mm-hmm. And then I remembered that night, and I said, well, do you know Ken Curtis? And he said, well, of course I know Ken Curtis. And I said, well, why don't you ask him if I sing well enough to sing with the Sons of Pioneers? And he said, well, Lloyd plays golf with him. I'll mention it to Lloyd. And they weren't calling, and they weren't calling. And Amy said, you've got to call Ken. And I really didn't want to. I didn't want to call him at home. And finally, Amy got me pretty good, and she got down on my face, and she said, just think about how mad he's going to be at you when he finds out that he could have helped you if you'd have given him a call, but you didn't. You sat around and waited until they got somebody else. He's going to be really mad at you. And she convinced me. So I finally called Lloyd, and I said, did Ken Curtis talk to you about me? He said, no, was he supposed to? And I said, well, I suggested that he ask you if I sing well enough to sing with the Sons of Pioneers. So I've kind of got it mixed up a little bit. Anyhow, this was Pat Brady that I told that to, I think. And then,
right.
Then he said, so I hung up the phone and it rang right back. And it was Lloyd. And he said, this is Lloyd Perriman. We want to hear you sing. When can you come up? And I said, I'll be up tomorrow. And he said, oh, no, we can't have you do that. No. And he was sounding a lot like Pat did at first, you know. And I don't mind. I'll be up tomorrow, you know. And then I remembered the next day was Thanksgiving. And I said, oh, that's right. It's Thanksgiving tomorrow. I said, how about Friday? And he said, Friday will be great. So I met Lloyd. Yeah. I met Lloyd at his house in Burbank and rode with him over to the San Fernando Valley to Pat Brady's house, where the rest of the Sons of Pioneers were there to give me an audition. And on the way over, I told Lloyd, I said, Lloyd, I've never sung harmony before. I don't really know anything about it. He said, oh, it's not a problem. I'll show you how to do that. Well, that sounded pretty good. You know, I thought, wow. So we got there, and Lloyd said, I get introduced, and I'm getting ready to sing. And he said, well, do you know Tumbling Tumbleweeds? Well, who doesn't, you know? And I said, sure. And he said, well, just sing lead. Well, what I didn't know is the Sons of Pioneers, part of their magic was the inverted harmonies that they used.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, most groups around that play nightclubs and stuff, they sing a trio with the lead in the middle and the tenor above and the baritone below, and mm-hmm. they just keep moving those three parts up and down. Well, the Pioneers switched them all the time. So he said, sing Tumbling Tumbleweeds. Well, I hit it, and the first two lines are what's called lead on top. So mm-hmm. all I did go, see them tumbling. They're hearing the trio then because they got the other parts right where they belong. And
right.
Anyway, I sang the first two lines, and I remember Lloyd stopped, and he said, this is going to work. And it was a gesture that it was fun. That I became familiar with. He would take his hands and put them up by his ears in order to get the level of discipline that you need to reach the level of perfection that they had in the Sons of Pioneers. You have to defer to one guy, because when you're having those rehearsals and everybody gets visiting and stuff, and you're going off in five different directions. And Lloyd would put his hands up, and whenever he did, we all stopped what we were doing, and we focused on Lloyd. And
yes.
I later became really familiar with that, but he did it. I remember that when he first heard me sing, and he said, it's not it yet, but it's going to be. And so I was pretty excited about it. And so he said, what I'm going to do, he told me on the way back to his place, he said, I'll record your part as if it was a song, and I'll just sing the tenor part onto a tape, and then you take it home and you learn it just like you're learning a song, and then we'll have our next rehearsal. So I went home with this after he sent me home with a tape recorder. I probably had to go back and get it because he had to do all that recording and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, come the first rehearsal, and while I was working with that at home, I got really frustrated because the little tiny intervals in there, and I just thought Lloyd didn't know it. He was wandering off pitch and stuff. And there's, I remember one song was Cowboy Jubilee, and it goes, "Come on and throw away your troubles, cast them to the moon, and all your worries for free, because there's a great day coming. Can't you hear them all humming? It's a cowboy jubilee." A funny little interval, sounded horrible, you know. And
yeah,
I told Amy, I said, "Gosh, I didn't know I had a tin ear. I can't do this. You know, I'm trying to learn it, but I'm..." And I said, "I can't do this." And Amy got down on my face and she said, "You can't afford not to." So I thought, okay, I went to that first rehearsal and I was almost defiant when I showed up there because I had that tape recorder with me and I was going to say, "Oh yeah, listen to this," you know, mm-hmm. But of course it laid it down perfectly. And when they put the other voices in the instrumentation in, it was just easy. It just flowed. And
oh,
so what I didn't know is that they had hired Billy Armstrong, who's 15 times national champion fiddle player, and he knew every song and harmony the Pioneers ever did. And they brought him into cover for me while I learned on the job. And the thing was that he had gotten an offer from CBS, and it was really a juicy offer for him. And he was kind of moaning a little bit about it when he first got the rehearsal and telling Lloyd, "Boy, I had this great offer at CBS." And he said, "But I gave my word, I'll be here and I'll do it." So anyway, we started rehearsal. We ran through those songs, and Lloyd looked up at Billy and said, "Take off, go do your job at CBS. He's got it." And
wow.
Billy said, "No, I promised." And he said, "We don't need you. He's got it." He said, "Are you kidding me?" No. So he snapped that fiddle case closed and was out the door, and he was a happy camper because he had this great offer. And Pat Brady turned to me and he said, "Good going, kid. You just doubled your pay." And I didn't know that they were going to take half of my pay and give it to, give it to Billy.
Oh.
But that's when it dawned on me, I'm actually going to get paid for doing this. I was so excited about singing with the Sons of Pioneers, I wasn't thinking about money. I was just thinking about getting it right and doing a good job with them, you know. But anyway, that's how I started and how I learned the harmonies. And I learned in on that reel-to-reel tape every song that I would sing with the Sons of Pioneers for the next year. We never added one more song to the repertoire until a year or so after that.
Wow.
So I learned a lot of songs, but I learned them on that reel-to-reel. That when I started singing with them, it was just easy. It just flowed, and it was wonderful. You know,
oh, my goodness.
It put you right where you belonged in the harmony. Yeah.
Right, exactly. So tell me what it was like. I mean, that was such an iconic, legendary group. I mean, what was it like to travel with them and be, inducted into the Hall of Fame and the Smithsonian thing? I mean, all of that. Just, what was that like?
It's incredible. And the first job we played was Cactus Pete's, a place called Jackpot, Nevada, which is just below Twin Falls, Idaho. And we played, it was nice. And, I kind of worked on my solos and it felt good. But the real import of it hadn't kicked in until we were asked to come and do a benefit for a hospital. They'd had a fire or something. And when we got there, they had a big auditorium with this big sound system, and we hit the stage and we hit Tumbling Tumbleweeds, and Lloyd thanked everybody and said, "We are the Sons of Pioneers." And I looked across that stage and I thought, wow, they really are the Sons of Pioneers, but it took a while for me to get used to the idea that I was also, But that audience, when we hit Tumbling Tumbleweeds, they came at us. I mean, I wrote it in a poem. They came at us like a wall. The audience just rose to their feet. And the full impact of what it was like to have an audience welcome, the Sons of the Pioneers, was incredible. That didn't happen at Cactus Pete's. You know, it was a dinner show and stuff.
Yes.
But when we hit that auditorium, that was an incredible thing. When you think we might have time for it, I have a poem. It's called Just a Few Memories, and it involves my years with the Sons of Pioneers, and I think your listeners might enjoy hearing it. I'll leave it up to you, Belinda.
Do you have it handy?
I got it right here, yeah.
Well,
you want to do it now?
Go ahead and read it, sure.
Okay, it'll give you some of the feel of that, a little bit of it.
Absolutely.
In my early years with the Pioneers, we traveled without our wives in a Dodge motorhome without much chrome, and that's where we spent much of our lives. Most of our shows were at rodeos and sometimes a county fair, just the five of us in that crowded bus, and we drove it most everywhere. We actually got along pretty well for as much time as we spent together, packed in there with all of our gear, and we traveled in all kinds of weather. Like that time just outside Minneapolis, we were shocked when the weatherman said, it was 50 below just a short time ago, but now my thermometer's dead. At other times when the air wasn't working, and it never was half the time, or a sign told you to shut it off if you had some mountain to climb, it would get so hot you could fry an egg on the sidewalk, somebody said. We didn't try that, but we did soak towels to put on the driver's head. Some folks think picking and singing is easy, and sometimes that might be true, except when you're doing a show in the sun and the temp is 102. When you're catching a red-eye flight and your room won't be ready till 3, and the show's going to start at 6 o'clock and you're doing the show for free. There were times when our plane couldn't even take off because of the snow or the fog, or times when you stood there singing and smiling while feeling as sick as a dog. My hat's off to Margie, Fayetta, and Buddy, Marianne, and my Amy, of course, for it sure takes a special woman who'll stay and take care of your kids and your horse. Once we were crossing the Alberta Plains while I was asleep in my bed, when the rig shut down and the lights went out, and Lloyd hollered at me and said, Rusty, come see the northern lights, and we all began to unload. We hadn't seen a car for over an hour, so we laid right down in the road. It was one of those times I will never forget, and I've thought about that one for years, watching the northern lights in the road with the Sons of the Pioneers. Pat Brady fixed us all hamburgers once as we burned up the miles heading east. It doesn't get much better than that, and just one of them was a feast. I remember the times when we'd gather and sing at the front of the bus as we rolled, just singing for fun with a single guitar, and those old songs to us were pure gold. There were nights when I sat there just holding the wheel and watching the darkness flow past, then staring into a sunrise or sunset till we got to a fairgrounds at last. I remember us standing in front of the mics while lightning was dancing around, singing Cool Water, the show must go on, but the rain just came pouring down. Believe it or not, this really happened, and several times, by the way. I'd start singing Water, and down it would come with a thunder and lightning display. The friendships I made, especially in rodeo, are special in so many ways. And it's good to think that some of those friends might still think of me from those days. I remember the thrill of seeing an audience coming at us like a wall, standing and cheering in thunderous applause as we took off our hats and stood tall. We sang in the Far East and Europe, went down in old Mexico too, all over the U.S. and Canada, and we kept those great harmonies true. All those times that we sang with Roy Rogers, who to us was just like a brother, and Dale was so special, and we loved them both, and the way that they both loved each other. I miss those old days, and if there was a way I could call them all back, I'd sure do it. I was living a dream that was not just mine, but other guys too, and I knew it. And I miss Lloyd and Dale and Pat and Roy, and hope someday to see them again. What an honor to travel and sing with them all. They were legends and mighty fine men. Grateful to all the talented men who came along after that time, and of course all of those who had come before me with their melodies, stories, and rhyme. To Bob Nolan and Roy Rogers, Hugh and Carl Farr, and Tim Spencer, may God bless you all in heaven where you are. Your music brought me happiness and still does to this day. I hold a debt of gratitude I never can repay. But thank you, Bob and Roy and Carl and Tim and Hugh, for the life that I was blessed to live was all because of you. All the live shows down in Nashville, as well as on TV, Ralph Emery, Nashville Palace, and the Grand Ole Opry. We have a star on the sidewalk in the Hollywood Walk of Fame, our hands and boots in concrete where they had me write my name. All the TV on the West Coast and everyone else across the nation, we sung on every small or big TV or radio station. We played every major venue, brush track, or pumpkin roller. Our audiences ran from the old folks to a baby in its stroller. Merv Griffin and Mike Douglas, Johnny Carson, and the rest were wonderful, and it was great to be on their shows as a guest. The Smithsonian made us welcome with good food and for good measure. We sang and someone there declared us all a national treasure. From the Western music, country music, cowboy halls of fame, along with many others, too numerous to name, we received so many honors, I could never list them all, that every pioneer deserves to be in every single hall. There are hundreds of other great memories that took place in those wonderful years, but I hope you've enjoyed these from my early days with the Sons of the Pioneers.
Wow, that pretty much says it all, doesn't it? That's amazing.
Well, it
kind
of takes you through it. No, it doesn't say it all, but it says a little of it. There was so much more than that. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Well, now you wrote a song that you sent me that is kind of recaps some of that, and I think now is would be as good a time as any to hear that, and it's called Old Pioneers. And you were just trying to recapture part of that time. Is that was what motivated you to write this song?
You know, I was thinking about my old friends. On the downside of it is I was so much younger than them that one by one I had to say goodbye to them. And I was sitting there thinking about them and all the times that we'd had. And I wrote the song to honor their memory.
Wow. Well, let's listen to Old Pioneers.
Old Pioneers, I'm calling down your sundown trail. Somewhere out in the west, I hope you hear me. Down through the years, I follow you and tell your tale. And when I do my best, I feel you near me. Late in the night, when my campfire's burning low, I can hear you in the gentle winds that blow. The dawn, its silver light creeping. Did I hear you in my dreams, or were you here while I was sleeping? In spring, when raindrops gather in the roiling river, cascading down the falls, I stand in wonder and sing again old songs you wrote that make me shiver. As old friends from the clouds applaud with thunder, your voices in harmony blend, where old trails of memories wend. Cascading down through the strings. Oh, how that sweet fiddle sings. I know someday I'll ride off in that golden sunset, and in that final scene I'll hear you singing. Till then, old friends, I'll ride the trails we rode together and share in all the joy your songs keep bringing. For your music still lives on, old pioneers.
Oh, I love that, Rusty. The melody is beautiful. Besides,
oh,
in the words,
thank
of
you,
course.
Lynn.
My gosh. So tell me, how were you always a songwriter, or is that something that just kind of evolved while you were at the Pioneers, or when did that really start blossoming in your life?
Well, I wrote a song years when I was a kid. It's called "Yodeling Away the Blues." Yeah, I thought it was just kind of corny, and I showed it to the Pioneers, and they said, "That's a hit song right now." So I got some encouragement from them. And then I left the Pioneers for a few years, and I was with a group called the Frontiersmen and Joni. And they just caught fire with my songwriting. When I wrote "Call of the Wild," they were very supportive and very complimentary, and Amy was too. And Amy said, you know, your stuff is as good as anybody's. And I never believed her, you know, but then I had more people getting on me and telling me this stuff is good, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so eventually some of my stuff was recorded by the Sons of Pioneers and other artists as well. Dinah Shore recorded one of my songs. And anyway, a lot of the different Western groups have recorded them. So
wow.
That was very encouraging, you know, when you start getting feedback from people and they really like it, as you know, that that sets a fire in you and makes you believe in yourself, you know.
It does. So you know, one of the things besides your amazing lyrics, one of the things I really love about your songwriting is melodically you take it to unexpected places, which is always is such a fun thing to listen to your songs, Rusty.
Well, thank you, Belinda. It's one of the challenges as a songwriter is, How do I make this unique? And I try to write a variety of subjects. You know, I've written on all kinds of different things to not just write the same thing over and over again. What can I do
right.
now that's fresh and different? And,
right.
And,
well, you're very good at it, partner. You really, really are.
Well, thank you, Belinda.
Oh, gosh. Well, you know what I want to talk about now, because Maury, time is flying just like it did last week. But I would really love to talk about your time as a rodeo cowboy. And you have some, you know, pretty amazing stories and a friendship with a legendary rodeo cowboy. And so let's talk about that a little bit.
Okay. Well, you know, I never had a great career as a rodeo cowboy. I only rodeoed in California. There was a stock contractor here named Eldon Yost, and I mostly just went to his rodeos. I did a lot of jackpot rodeos besides the Eldon Yost rodeos. And anyway, that I didn't make a great career out of it, but I wouldn't trade those years for anything. I, to this day, really love the sport of rodeo, and I had some great experiences, and I did get by a few good head livestock that are great memories for me to have been able to make the whistle on some of them. And, you know, that's minimal compared to what guys do today, you know. So, but they're my heroes, and I love them, and I love watching them ride. And when I was with the Sons of the Pioneers, we always followed the saddle bronc riding, and I never rode saddle broncs. But today I'm a frustrated saddle bronc rider. I wish I had of, you know. What might have been doesn't count, and I didn't. I got on a couple of my own. We had a place here called Majeska Rodeo Ranch, and I had it with the Nolf family, some partners. Grant Nolf, that was my rodeo companion, he and I were going to build a roping arena, and then his dad said, why don't we do this together and stuff, and he wanted to be part of it. Well, Grant had a whole lot of brothers, and I ended up with, you know, a dozen partners. But we had rodeo livestock, and I got on a couple of our own saddle broncs. But anyway, we followed them, and I watched every bronc ride that went when I was with the Pioneers, because we were on next, you know. And I probably saw more bronc riding than the bronc riders did, because they're busy getting ready.
Right.
And I watched every ride and got pretty good at it, you know.
Wow.
Become aficionado.
Yes, you are. So tell us about your friendship with Casey Tibbs.
Well, I met Casey in the picture business when I was working in films, and he was really good to me, and he'd introduce me to other people and say, you ought to see this guy ride bulls, and he made more out of it than there really was, you know, but he became a close friend, and then he was still rodeoing, and so when I was traveling with the Pioneers, he'd come to our shows, or we'd go to dinner together, and you know, our friendship just grew through that. And then I didn't see him for a long time, and he showed up on the Portola ride, which is a big ride we have here in Orange County. And we were riding through beautiful grass on the Mission Viejo Ranch. And I said, boy, this is what I need. I'm horse poor right now. I got so many horses. And he didn't say anything for a little while. And then pretty soon he said, I might be able to help you out on that. Well, people say things, but they don't usually follow through. And I didn't think a lot about it until he called me about a couple of days later and said, you want to come and look at this and see if it'll work? And I drove down to San Diego, and we went to a valley called the El Cap, because Lake El Capitan is on the property. And it was 33,000 acres of Indian land. And Casey'd had a lease on it, but he wasn't using it right then. And it wasn't the best pasture, but it was a lot of it. And we rode around that 33,000 acres, and it had a waterfall on it like you'd have in Yosemite, and a place called the Devil's Punch Bowl. And I said, yeah, it'll work. So I brought about 25 head down and kicked them in. And then Casey had about 7 head we put in together. And the next thing you know, I'm just wearing out the road between here and San Diego, checking on the horses. And Casey and I spent time together, and our friendship just really grew. We became inseparable pals. And I'd go down and trim and shoe horses for him and stuff like that. And he'd come here once in a while. I went there more than he came here, but he did come sometimes. So that's how our friendship started. And then Amy and I was with the Sons of Pioneers, and we were at, I think, Minot, North Dakota. And on our trip, we were kind of going to come back to Durango for the Louis L'Amour picnic. Louis L'Amour was a dear friend of ours. So we went up and we did a show, and it was sort of like Oompa bands and all of that, except Sons of Pioneers were such a relief. To be hearing Two Fat Polkas since, 7 o'clock in the morning, and we'd go on about 7 at night. And they've been hearing, the Two Fat Polka for hours. So I don't know whether they really liked us or they just liked the variety, but they went crazy when we started to sing. And Casey said, well, if you're going up there, why don't you stop and see my folks? So, and he just insisted, and we stopped at Spearfish, and then we went to Fort Pier, and his sister Katie insisted that we stay all night with them. And while we were visiting, I said, is there anything left of the old place? And first she said, no. And I said, well, there's nothing left? Well, she said, it's still there. It's just all falling apart. She said, do you want to see it? And I said, I would love to see it. And it was such an incredible experience to go up. It was 50 miles from Fort Pier. And we met Fio, F-I-O, that's Casey's nephew. And I just hit it off with him. I really liked him to this day. I really think the world of him. But she said, Fio will take us out. So that meant we got up early enough that we were 50 miles from Fort Pier in the dark, waiting for the sun to come up, having coffee. And when it started breaking daylight, we got in a station wagon with Fio, and we drove through several gates and finally ran out of any road at all or any sign of any vehicles. We were just plowing through brush and grass, and finally we looked off to the left, and there it was. The old Breaking Krells and barn. And there aren't that many trees in South Dakota. So they had to locate those along the Cheyenne River and drag them in there by horse to build the structures, and the homestead, the house. And so to speed this up a little bit, driving home, I kept saying to Amy, this is an incredible story. And I said, somebody needs to write this. I said, if you ended his life story before he ever entered his first rodeo, it'd be a heck of a story. And I kept saying, somebody needs to write this. And Amy said, yeah, and you're just the guy to do it. And she said, think about it. She said, it needs to be written by a cowboy. And she said, everybody that Casey knows, and both from the picture business, from the ranching business, from the rodeo business, and they'll talk to you, and they're not going to talk to other writers. They'd have a difficult time getting it. And so I called Casey, and He said, frankly, I'm really hard on writers. He said, I've never recognized myself in anything anybody ever wrote about me. And I said, well, let me write you a little something, and if you don't like it, just throw it in the trash. So I gave him what would be like a couple chapters, and I didn't hear a word from him. We talked almost every day, never mentioned it, for about 2 months. And one day I got a call from him, and he said, I like it, I like it. My folks are going to like it, too. You know, go on, give me some more to read. And he got excited about it. And anyway, that's how the book got, that's how I got started writing it. And the only writing experiences I'd written for a national magazine on breaking horses and on dealing with problem horses and stuff. Mm-hmm. I had the featured article every month for over 2 years in a national magazine. So I had that experience as well as writing songs and stuff, you know. But I hadn't, writing a biography is not an easy thing to do.
No,
especially
it's not.
When I don't have a staff. Amy was my staff, and I put her to work a lot. And she did a lot of research things for me and helped me tremendously. You know, I should mention that somebody once said that cowboy is a fraternity that a lot of people would like to join, but few are willing to pay the price. Mm-hmm. Well, I knew what I was going to do, and I was more than willing to pay the price. That's all I ever wanted to do. But when you get married, I mean, you reach a point where if you haven't got the support, you have to choose between the marriage and what you really want to do. Mm-hmm. And Amy supported me 100% of the time through everything that I did.
Well,
she had a
two-week-old
baby in her. She had a two-week-old baby in her lap the day I got on Bluebell, who was, you know, they would save him for the last bull at the national finals. Mm-hmm. That's how spectacular he was, and he was dangerous too. He'd really come after you, you know. So things like that, and all the rough stock that she saw me get on, and she was mm-hmm. there and supported me, and I know it wasn't easy. And I'd leave and go on the road to the Pioneers and leave her with an old ranch with broken down fences and loose cattle and a dog that made things worse. And, you know, and she did all of that. And she just was, mm-hmm. and she was there at the airport for me when I got home. Yeah, she's been a wonderful partner. And it was just on a trial basis, one day at a time, I tell her. And it's been 56 years so far.
Oh, my goodness. Well, before, I would like to go to a song that you wrote, Rodeo Cowboy. But before we go to that song, please tell our listeners the name of your book on Casey Tibbs.
Okay, it's called Casey Tibbs, Born to Ride.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the title of the book. And I should tell you, my publisher tells me it's been number one on Amazon for 2 years in sports biography.
So nice.
It's and all I have are hardcover. If anybody wants an autographed hardcover limited edition, they can get that from me. I still have a few of them left.
And we will give them your website at the end of the show. So hang on, and we'll make sure that they have that information. So so you wrote the song Rodeo Cowboy. Tell us a little about that, and then we'll go ahead and listen to it.
I just wrote it from my own experience, and, you know, cowboy was a phenomenal experience for me.
Mm-hmm.
I just thought I should sort of write one about that.
Well, it's a good one. Let's listen to Rodeo Cowboy.
I keep it up.
A pickup truck, a saddle, and a CB radio. The rope and horse I straddle, and the trailer that I tow. The country that I live in, the good fortune to be free.
A rodeo cowboy, that's me.
I wouldn't trade my life with any man, even if I could. I'd rather be a cowboy than a star in Hollywood. My friends are other cowboys and a girl or two I know. Motel rooms and fairgrounds make the home that I love so. The rodeo arena is my favorite. Wrangler shirt and Levi's, a buckle hat and boots, my bull robe and bronc saddle, rosined up behind the shoes, a buck rein and my chaps, an ace bandage on my knee,
a rodeo cowboy, that's me.
I wouldn't trade my life with any man, even if I could. I'd rather be a cowboy than a star in Hollywood. I pray sometimes when traveling down the highway all alone, for luck when drawing livestock, that I'll never break a bone. And sometimes just to give thanks, and if you want my pedigree,
a rodeo cowboy, that's me. A rodeo cowboy, that's me.
Oh, I like that song, Rusty. That's a good
I'm getting used to you saying things like that.
Oh, well, it's true. You know that I adore you, Rusty, and I'm just such a huge fan.
Oh, thank you, Belinda.
And there's one thing I have to ask you about, though, you mentioned earlier, and I didn't want to say anything at the time because I didn't want to interrupt your train of thought, but, I mean, I am such an admirer of Louis L'Amour, and you, like, were good buddies with him?
Yes. Amy and I would go up and have lunch with him once or twice a month, and he knew that we loved his storytelling, and we'd meet him at the Beverly Hills Hotel in the Polo Lounge, and he would launch into some of the greatest stories. He told us about riding Last of the Breed. You know, actually, you know, he said he was in a bar in Singapore, and this guy was talking about, I forgot what they call the people, but they're sort of Yahoots, Amy said.
Yahoo.
They're like a Russian version of American Indian, and they're really skilled at survival, you know, and so Louis and this guy were talking about him, and Louis said, I wonder who would win if there was a confrontation between an American Indian who's also very skilled in it and one of them. And that's how the story developed. It's a great story. It's not a Western, but I can highly recommend that book. Last of the Breed. So, yeah, Louis was a dear friend, and we were very fortunate to know him. And I have all of his books that were given to me and Amy and autographed for us. They were all soft cover, and later on I bought those leather-bound ones. And just Amy and I got them at some of the festivals or something. They had them there.
Yeah,
but,
what treasure.
We got them all originally from Louis, personalized to us.
Oh, my. That is so cool, Rusty, I have to say. Among all the very cool stuff that's gone on in your life. Well, I am so delighted that, as you know, as your life, you got on later in life, you still are showing up at, like, our festivals and at the Western Music Association convention every year. You know, you're definitely still sharing your music with us, and we're so blessed that that's happening. But you also really refocused a lot of your attention on horse training, it seems like to me, as you got older, and much to your precious wife Amy's chagrin, because I know personally of a couple of different times when we're like, oh, Rusty's in the hospital, he was in a horse wreck, and so.
I had more than my share of them, that's for sure. But I didn't really get away from it and refocus. I did it all through my career. And that's because it was always earlier here than wherever I'd been, and we had all those colts to break, and I just kept right on going with it, you know.
Yeah.
And
wow.
I fit so much into my life, and I need to mention that Jason and I sing together quite a bit now, my son.
Yes.
And that's
yes.
really fun, and we did that also with Amy Jo and with Jenny before we lost her, and
right.
We had a great family show for a while. Now Amy Jo's moved away, and she still writes. She communicates to Nashville and co-writes with some of the writers there, and she He's a wonderful writer and performer. And
wow.
I also forgot to mention my brother's first name is George in last week's show. And
yes.
I just kept calling him my brother. And he did 30 uh-huh. years in the Marine Corps. Yeah. Anyway,
wow.
I know you're running out of time, so...
No. It's okay. We have a little wiggle room. Thank goodness this is online
okay.
radio, so we don't have to just
yeah.
you know cut it right off at the top of the hour like we would on a normal radio station. So
mm-hmm.
we still have a little time. I'm not going to push you too hard.
Well, my specialty in horses was starting the young ones. I call it breaking horses, and I
mm-hmm.
broke hundreds, if not thousands, of them over the years. And when I published my information in a national magazine, I got I started attracting a lot of really rank horses and stuff. And Amy'd say, "How in the world are you ever going to get on that thing?" You know, horse had already put the guy in the hospital or something. And I remember one of them standing on his hind legs. He's 100 yards from the front out, just trying to see me when I came out the front door. But anyway,
oh my
I had
gosh.
A lot of them like that. And I remember telling Amy, he's just another horse. He's got to be smarter than he is, you know, and that's really true. And,
uh-huh.
but anyway, when I first started, I didn't know anything about what I was doing, you know. I'd like to have a second chance at some of those horses. But I learned and eventually started getting a reputation and started attracting more horses. And now I think I'm as good as anybody at starting colts and stuff. One of the things that I try to get across to people is if you have any facades about yourself, you say, well, I'm going to learn from him because he's a, you know, he's not a cowboy or whatever. But if he's got something really good, get rid of that facade and learn wherever you can. Because
mm-hmm.
I learned most of it from horses, but I learned from other people too. I didn't have a mentor. I had to just learn where I could. And I tell them that, you know, if it's an old fat lady in rubber boots and she does something really good, ask her how she did it. And the best horseman that I ever got to know, two of the best of them, one was Ronnie Richards. He was no relation to me. And I remember him asking me, you know, about how I did something with a horse. And I remember thinking, why is he asking me? He's 15 times national champion. And
mm-hmm.
then I realized that's how he got there. He
mm-hmm.
and Glenn Randall was another one. You know, his most famous thing he did was Trigger. He trained Trigger. But he went way beyond that. He was a great reinsman. He trained the Rejoneador, many of the bullfight horses of Mexico, lots of the circus
mm-hmm.
horses that you see. The clowns trained trick ponies and mules. Glenn Randall was the guy. All the horses you saw in the movies beside Trigger. So many of them were trained by Glenn Randall. And
wow.
I remember him asking me about something, putting a stop on the horse. And same deal, you know. So, anyhow.
So your message is don't be ashamed to glean a knowledge wherever you can find it.
Wherever you can get it, you know. Just
mm-hmm.
Get a thirst for knowledge. It'll make a better and better horseman out of you.
Yes,
and get rid of any facades you have about yourself, you know.
Wow. That's just good advice about life in general.
Yeah, I think it is. I think it's
yeah,
really good. For,
I think it is. Well, you had alluded
course,
to
Jenny,
your... Go ahead.
Yeah. Go
I was
ahead.
Gonna say you had alluded to your beautiful wife, Amy, and she... From what I can see being around you guys and from the outside looking in, she is really your rock, Rusty. She just...
She's just an amazing
woman. And I think one of my special memories that I love, I think the first time I saw you perform, you had a new song that you were trotting out for everybody to hear, and you didn't quite have it as memorized as you would have hoped. And Amy was feeding you the words from the front row of the
She's done that more than once, I'll tell you. Yeah. And I could not have had the cowboy life that I've had without Amy's support. It just wouldn't have happened without her being for me and, you know, really supporting me and what I wanted to do.
Well, she is just an amazing woman and just so precious. And anybody who ever gets a chance to meet you and Amy both, it's just wonderful.
I'll be in trouble if I don't mention... I'm sorry, Belinda.
Go ahead.
My daughter Molly, that I haven't mentioned her. She doesn't sing, but she's a major part of our family and all that. And I'd be in big trouble if I didn't mention Molly also. And of course,
well,
I'd love to mention her. She's,
of course. Yeah. And what does Molly do?
Molly is married and lives over the hills, not too far from us. So we get together with her for breakfast every once in a while. And her husband Dale sells real estate.
Okay.
And that's it. And they have a daughter, Becky.
So she's a full-time mom, which is a very demanding job.
Yeah, well, she's not now. Becky has moved away and gone to school. Mm-hmm. And she's in the show business also. She writes comedy and stuff. And I've forgotten the name of the place in Chicago where she went. Amy, what's that called? Where Becky went. It's very famous.
Second City.
Second City.
Oh, okay.
And she went there. Some people will know what that means.
Somebody will know what that means for sure.
Yeah.
Well, you
and I have a lot of other grandkids.
Well, you got to love those grandbabies. those
yeah.
are really the jewels in our crown, aren't they? Those grandbabies.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, yeah.
For sure.
Great grandbabies for us, too.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh. Such a treasure of a family that you have. Now, you talked little bit about Jenny. I'd like to talk a little bit about Jenny, and I didn't mean to interrupt you. Did you want to say something else?
Yes, but I've forgotten what it was. But anyway, Jenny was it. She lived close to us, and you know, if I'd call her and tell her I'm making hotcakes, you'd think I just gave her a new car. You know, she'd come down here all excited, and she was here in a heartbeat. You know, whenever we called her. And she was a marvelous singer and just as good a writer. She wrote beautiful stuff. She just was a tremendous writer. She wasn't quite in the Western thing. She was, I don't know how you'd describe her, but she had a gorgeous voice. And she got cancer and lived about 6 months, a rare form of cancer. And that changed our lives. I mean, I just didn't know how we would ever survive at the time without her. And I remember saying to Amy, think about what Jenny would want, because we were wasting away. You know, all we could think about was her death, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, would Jenny be happy or unhappy if we gave up and didn't go forward, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so we decided that the best thing for us to do is try to make a life for ourselves. And you never get over it, but you're not consumed with it 24 hours a day like you are for, you know, the first year.
Mm-hmm.
You can't think of anything else. You wake up in the morning, it's the first thing you think about and the last thing you think about before you go to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
But that has passed, where we're able to do other things and make a life for ourselves. And the little church that we go to has been very supportive and very helpful for us.
Mm-hmm.
I'll get their name right this time. Center for Spiritual Living, Saddleback Valley. And we have two ministers there, Reverend Steve and Reverend Lynn.
Mm-hmm.
And they've become dear friends of ours, and we really enjoy our association with them. And we're if we possibly can, we're there every Sunday.
Wow.
Because of my work, I don't make it. But other than that, I'm there, you know, and they are really, really very supportive.
That's wonderful. And it's just such, to have a foundation of faith that you can fall back on through those difficult times like that, and a loss, especially a loss of a child. You know, parents are not supposed to outlive their children, and you know, that is just such a gift in people's lives. I don't know how people who don't have that, how they make it through with their sanity intact. It's just, I'm so grateful for you guys that you have that and had that support.
Well, it'll be 10 years, June 1st, next week, since we lost Jenny.
Wow. Oh, that's hard to believe it's been that long, man.
I remember
when you all were going through that. Wow. Oh, well, we're going to, on a little different note, we're going to go ahead and go to another song now, and then we're going to come back and kind of close out with you. And just so thank you for sharing about Jenny. And we're going to go to another Sons of the Pioneer song that you did. And Don't Fence Me In.
Wildcat Kelly looking mighty pale,
was standing by the sheriff's side. And when the sheriff said, I'm sending you to jail, Wildcat raised his head and cried,
oh, give me land, lots of land under starry skies above. Don't fence me in. Let me ride to the wide open country that I love. Don't fence me in. Let me be by myself in the evening breeze, listening to the murmur of the cottonwood trees. Send me off forever, but I ask you please, don't fence me in, just turn me loose. Let me straddle my old saddle underneath the western skies. On my cayuse, let me wander over yonder till I see the mountains rise. I want to ride to the ridge where the west commences, gaze at the moon until I lose my senses. Can't look at hobbles and I can't stand fences. Don't fence me in. To ride to the ridge where the west commences, gaze at the moon until I lose my senses. Can't look at hobbles and I can't stand fences. Don't fence me in. Don't fence me in. Don't fence me in.
Oh, such a great sound. I love it. Well, this just flew by again so fast. Your stories are so great, Rusty, and it's just been so much fun having you on the show. And for our listeners out there, if you want to get your hands on Rusty's music or his book about Casey Tibbs, you can go to www.rustyrichards.com and pick up all of that, as well as learn more about Rusty and his family. And just, oh, it's been so much fun having you on, Rusty. Just, you're
Thank
a jewel.
You, Belinda.
You are a jewel.
Coming from you, wonderful. I don't remember all the awards that you got, but I think you were Entertainer of the Year, Female Vocalist of the Year, Songwriter of the Year. And so many wonderful things. And any compliment I get coming from you is tremendous.
Oh, you're so sweet. You're so sweet. I'm not even close, but thank you, Rusty. I'm glad you think that. So cute. Well, we're going to close out your segment with a duet that you did with my dear late singing partner, Curly Musgrave. And he wrote this wonderful poem that he later turned into a song. And when he got ready to record it, he definitely wanted to turn it into a duet, that he had his eye on you to do this duet with him. And I was grateful to get to sit in the studio and do a little harmony with you guys. But you want to tell us a little bit about your relationship with Curly and about your experience recording this song?
Sure. We met Curly first at Tucson at one of the WMA festivals. And I had the kids there then, and he just was so good to all of them, encouraging them we just fell in love with him. I mean, we just couldn't get enough of Curly. And he, you know, we considered him a dear friend. And I had been ill, probably with my ticker. I get an episode every once in a while with my heart. And so I wasn't feeling really great when I went in to record this with Curly, but I'm doing the voice of an old man, so I don't think it really hurt it any, you know. And I was an honor to be able to sing with Curly, and you're on there too. With the three of us singing.
I'm throwing in some harmony here and there, but it's one of my favorite songs that Curly recorded, and he did it with you. And so thank you again so much for being on the show. Rusty, and give your precious wife Amy a big old hug for me, And hopefully we'll see y'all sooner than later. And we're going to close out this segment with Thanks by Curly Musgrave featuring Rusty Richards.
Tonight I walk by the bunkhouse, and in the dim light by his bed, that old cowboy who still calls me son took off his hat and bowed his head and said,
I know it's been a while, Lord, since I checked in on my knees, but I often hear your counsel as I ride out on the breeze. But tonight, sunset you give me in the West Montana sky was the best I can remember, and so I'm coming by to just say thanks for letting this old cowboy live another day. And thanks for that Montana sky tonight. And by the way, if I never see another, I'll die a happy man. For the love and strife of a cowboy life, I give my love and thanks.
You ain't seen me in no church, Lord, since Christmas 63. But when I'm riding herd neath the northern lights, I can feel you touching me. And I see you on each lonely trail where me and old pony run. When I catch that coyote on the moon or an eagle again the sun.
And I hear your voice in the thunder that fills the prairie sky. In the nicker of a newborn colt, a sleeping baby sighs. When the Chinook blows across the plains or new life fills the land, I don't need no steeple over me to see your wondrous hand. And thanks for letting this old cowboy live another day. And thanks for that Montana sky tonight. And by the way, if I never see another, I'll die a happy man. For the love and strife of a cowboy life, I give my love and thanks.
Guess you and me's been down this road, Lord, and saddle pounds along. But when it's time to hang my spurs up, I hope you'll hire me on.
Room and board's enough for wages, with a Stetson for a crown. If heaven's like Montana, I'd be glad to settle down.
Maybe you and me'd go fishing or ride a trail along the banks.
But till you send that final sunset, I'll just say amen and thanks for letting this old cowboy live another day. And thanks for that Montana sky tonight. And by the way, if I never see another, I'll die a happy man. For the love and strife of a cowboy life, I give my love. Thanks, I give my love and thanks. I give my love and thanks. Thank you, God.
Oh, two of my favorite cowboys on that song, that's for sure. Well, as I was doing research for my show with Rusty, I came across a link on his bio for a song written and recorded by his late and beloved daughter, Jenny, when she was only 17 years old. And oh my goodness, what a beautiful song and amazing wisdom for such a young person. And to me, her wisdom and sensitivity was the reflection not only of all the encompassing love of our precious Savior, but also of her parents, Rusty and Amy, and the way they brought up all of their children. how much better this world would be if all of humanity truly understood and accepted that we are all the same in God's eyes, equally loved, equally cherished, and because of the unfathomable sacrifice of his beloved Son, Jesus Christ, we are all equally welcomed to share eternity with him. And that is not just an, oh, wouldn't it be nice sentiment. It is actually backed up by quite a bit of scripture. One of them is in Acts 10:34 when Peter speaks, I now realize how true it is that God does not show favoritism. And that is echoed by Paul in Romans 2:11 with the same thing. God does not show favoritism. And in Galatians 3:26 through 27, so in Christ Jesus, you are all children of God through faith. For all of you who were baptized into Christ have clothed yourself with Christ. And this Colossians 3:10 and 11, it gets even more specific. You have put on the new self, which is being renewed in knowledge in the image of its creator. There is no Gentile or Jew, circumcised or uncircumcised, barbarian, Scythian, slave or free, but Christ is all and is in all. And in my mind, one of the most powerful scriptures that speaks to us of all being equally loved by the Lord and absolutely the same in his eyes is a very familiar scripture, John 3:16. For God so loved the world, and I mean the entire world, that he gave his one and only Son, that whoever believes in him shall not perish but have eternal life. So I would encourage all of us as we move through our days to keep tucked away in our hearts and minds that every person we meet, no matter how they appear to us, how deserving or undeserving they may seem in our eyes, they are equally loved and cherished by our most precious Heavenly Father. Well, that's our show for today. I am so delighted y'all could join us. We are always so grateful to you for giving us the gift of your time. Thank you again to our very special guest, Rusty Richards, for sharing so much of himself with us for 2 weeks in a row. And of course, a huge thank you to my amazing producer, Gary Holt, for all he does behind the scenes to make this show happen. And please remember, all of the fabulous shows on Equestrian Legacy Radio are archived for you to listen to at your convenience. And if you like our shows, please tell your friends about us. We normally close the show with one of my songs, but today I am honored to share with you a beautiful song I mentioned earlier, written and recorded by Rusty's precious late daughter, Jenny. So until next week, may all your trails be blessed, and I hope you enjoy the Human Rainbow.
Wrong or right, it's not just black and white, but red and yellow and gray. Brown and pink, I tend to think God wanted it this way. All colors, shapes, and sizes, a radiant garden grows. God made all the colors of the just us or them, but you and me and we and everything that's in between is what was meant to be. All dreams and hopes and hungers were sown into our souls. God made all the colors of the human rainbow. So if there is a hatred that feeds upon your soul, seeds God put on earth to grow. Each of us less than perfect, this God already knows. He made all the colors of, all the colors of, all the colors of the human.